Boomer Radio on Freedom 95 with your host, Julie Patterson.
Welcome to Boomer Radio, the Saturday before Valentine's Day. So we have a very special guest with us. In fact, she's known as the Love Doctor. Oh, yeah, she is. She's a professor. Her name is Dawn Masler, and she has written a fascinating book. She's done some research about the neuroscience behind Valentine's Day. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's just start with, what is a love biologist?
Well, it's somebody that actually researches the science of love on a biological level from the neuroscience level. So we're looking at the neurotransmitters, what happens to you physically, what happens to your brain, that type of thing.
Well, I watched the TED Talk. You did a TED Talk about all of this, and it was fascinating. And I don't know how we'll do our best to kind of just go through the steps of, you know, what makes men fall in love, you know, what makes women fall in love, the different chemicals that are involved in all of this, the science behind it, as you said. So when we talk about neuroscience, is that mostly the brain stuff or?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So everything that's happening in that brain of yours when you see that hottie across the room, or when you get to know somebody a little bit better, or as you're watching The Bachelor, trying to figure that out, right?
Exactly.
You know, I've felt like for a long time, like we should have a Bachelor for 50 plus, for the people over 50. I think it would be fascinating. I think it would be fun to watch.
I agree.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
I think it'd be a lot of fun. And you could be like, but we would set it up differently. Like maybe America's, you know, Top Model or one of those shows where we have a panel and you could be on the panel. We could like kind of dissect it as the show went on.
That would be really fun.
Oh, my goodness.
I love that idea. You got to pitch it.
I know. I just might do that. We'll see. Well, we are fascinated that you're going to be with us for this show today. You are a professor where?
I'm currently teaching at Kaplan University, which actually just got sold. So we're Purdue Global.
Interesting. Now, is that anything to do with our Purdue here in Indiana?
Yep.
Oh, cool. Well, see?
You just bought us.
Well, who knew? That's fascinating. Breaking news. So let's talk about this crazy little thing called love. What got you interested in the first place to dissect and research and jump in?
Well, I was a biology professor, and I had a bad love life. Here's the truth.
Yeah.
So once I started doing some work on myself, I wrote my first book. It was about picking the wrong men. But after that book came out, I started working with these women. They kept asking me these questions, like, how does love work? How long should you wait till you have sex? How do you know when you're in love? What happens when you're in love? They were asking me all these questions, and I'm like, well, you know, I'm a biologist. I have access to all the peer-reviewed research in the world at my university, at my school, so I should go look. So I did. I was like, I figured it'd take me a couple months to piece it all together. 5 years later.
5 years.
5 years. That's because love isn't one thing, and that's part of the problem.
Mm.
So you have to go through all the research, and is it early love, is it later love, and really kind of categorize everything, and then the patterns come out.
Do you think that people who are younger fall in love differently than people who are older?
We actually fall in love similarly. It doesn't really matter on age.
Okay.
And you can fall in love many times in your lifetime. So that's the good part.
So there's no number on that?
No.
Okay.
There's no expiration date on love.
I like that. That's good news for many people listening. That's very good news. Well,
yeah.
Let's take it back. Now, you know, the whole legend of St. Valentine was back when Emperor Claudius II would arrest people and kill them, basically, if they were defying orders. He didn't want his soldiers to marry. But there's a reason biologically that you think, I think, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, that makes sense. Let's kind of drill it down.
I'm sure at the time he wasn't doing, you know, taking blood samples from his soldiers.
I doubt it.
But it turns out when a man commits, and particularly if he marries a woman, his testosterone drops. And if you're Emperor Claudius II, you're trying to conquer Europe, you need heavily testosterone-fortified men to do this.
Makes sense.
It would make sense that he would prohibit them from getting married because now, that would keep their testosterone high.
Now, when I saw the TED Talk and I was reading about you a little bit, I was surprised by that when a man gets married, his testosterone level drops. I would have thought the opposite.
No, I think it's Mother's Nature's way of kind of keeping him in place because you think when he gets with a woman, they're going to probably have a child, and he's going to be more likely to come home when his testosterone drops and provide for his family.
Huh. So it sort of settles him down a bit, which I guess is what marriage does.
Well, that's what we call it. We call it settling down.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So it's interesting. We already have the language for it. Now the science is backing it up.
What about women? Now, women have some amounts of testosterone. Is it the same for them when they find a mate?
Theirs goes up. So they get quite amorous in the beginning.
Now, explain that. So we don't have to settle down? Is that what you're telling us?
No, I think that's Mother's Nature's way of propagating the species.
Got it.
Because it makes the woman much more attentive to the man.
Okay. So those are some of the things that you, some of the neuroscience. Can you explain what else is partnered with that? The neuroscience, the differences between the man and the woman.
Oh, okay. Well, for those are the main differences. When you fall in love, right, it's almost the same thing. Except the testosterone is different. But falling in love is different. So how we get there is different for men than for women. We both have the neurotransmitter dopamine. That's the part when you get excited.
Okay.
When you're dating somebody, you're excited, dopamine increases. But for a man, it looks like it's vasopressin that increases. And for a woman, it's oxytocin. So for a woman, as she learns to trust the guy, her oxytocin increases. But for a woman, when she has sex, or an orgasm, I should say, her oxytocin increases dramatically. So then we basically increase to reach a tipping point, and then you fall in love, which is funny because we call it falling in love. And we see a drop. We kind of like see this cascading effect of neurotransmitters going haywire when you fall in love.
So go ahead.
Well, for a woman, so she's more likely to fall in love with sex. A man falls in love with vasopressin and dopamine. The vasopressin increases when he's sexually excited, but rapidly decreases at orgasm. So he's less likely to fall in love after sex.
So, wait, stop the bus for a moment. What I'm hearing is, ladies, don't jump in the sack too quick, right?
Right. The dopamine or the vasopressin increases when he's sexually excited. So if he's excited, he's into you, and you kind of let him marinate in it in a while, he's more likely to fall in love.
I agree with that. I feel like that sometimes is called the old-fashioned way, but sounds like there might be some neuroscience to back that up.
It is. And if you watch my TED Talk, I mentioned in there that was my grandmother's. She told me this when I was a kid, and it turns out that she was right.
And what she told you essentially was, don't fall too soon. Wait till he's ready to make a commitment. Wasn't it something
Correct.
Like that? Yeah.
Yes. So when a guy makes the commitment to a woman, it's not necessarily when we talked about marriage with the emperor, but it's not necessarily marriage. It's the commitment. He starts falling in love prior. His testosterone drops prior. And so when he commits, and that seems to be the precipitating effect for him to start falling in love.
Okay, this may be a dumb question, but how can you tell if a man is committed? I mean, is that basic stuff or?
Well, you want to wait for him to ask for a commitment.
So you need the verbal commitment, not just, hey, he wants all of your time. He only has eyes for you. That might be coupled with it, but you're saying that they should be the words, hey, we're a committed monogamous relationship kind of a thing.
It works best if he asks the woman for exclusivity.
Okay. Is that how they word it these days? I have no idea.
Well, you're basically saying, would you like to be in an exclusive relationship?
Okay.
Mutually exclusive relationship.
Mutually exclusive relationship. So then you know he's committed. Then you know he's in love.
Correct.
And then
a
woman...
He's on his way. He's on his way to falling in love.
Okay. So you've kind of got him hooked at this point, I guess. So is it okay to jump into bed after that?
Yes.
Ah! So there's no three-date rule or any of the rules that you hear people that they have?
No, and the problem with the three-date rule is that a lot of guys nowadays know that three-date rule.
Ah.
So they're going along for the ride going, okay, on the third date, I'm going to have sex. And, you know, he already knows it's going to happen. If he's not interested in a commitment, because they'll tell you usually right away, even on the first date, that I'm looking for a relationship, I'm looking for fun. You know, and if he's looking for fun, you do the three-date rule, it doesn't matter because he's not interested in it. Think about it, his testosterone drops. That's a big decision that he has to make. It's kind of like him standing on a cliff trying to jump off.
You know, you're right. There are a lot of guys that are really afraid to commit. They don't want to. They feel like, you know, life is over for me. I'll never be with another woman, all of those things. So,
well, it's a huge drop in his testosterone. So if he's got other thing he wants to do, he wants to make partner some guys just got their testosterone back after being in a long-term relationship.
Hmm.
They're not ready to give it up yet.
I just don't fully understand it. It's interesting.
Especially in this age. You know, boomers in the older generation, not older generation, but guys that have been in a long-term relationship, you know, one of the things that brings up testosterone, which is funny, is the, you know, the midlife crisis,
mm-hmm,
red
mm-hmm.
sports car,
right.
That actually increases testosterone. It is scientifically proven.
We're going to talk more about that. We're going to take a quick break. I want to hear more about that, and we'll talk about those midlife crises. Also, you've got some thoughts on why we say love is blind, that and more when we return with the Love Doctor, Professor Dawn Masler, on Boomer Radio in just a moment.
Boomer Radio with Julie Patterson continues right after the break. Boomer Radio on Freedom 95. This is Julie Patterson.
All right. Thanks for tuning in to Freedom 95. You are listening to Boomer Radio. This is our special Valentine's Day edition. We've got the Love Doctor. Professor Dawn Masler is on the line. My email is julie@indieboomer.com. I have my computer open. I just got a question about the midlife crisis we were talking about. It says, Julie, please ask the Love Doctor if a midlife crisis happens because your man isn't interested in you anymore and his testosterone goes up and he's kind of on the prowl. Huh.
Ooh, that's a great question.
What do you think?
Well, it could. Now, it could mean that, but oftentimes it means that it's gone too low. And he really, if it drops too low, he's going to try to do something to get it up. And one of those things could be the midlife crisis. What he needs really is love and appreciation.
Interesting.
But we do see a rise up if he is on the prowl again. But oftentimes, it's not necessarily, he's just trying to boost, he's trying to bump it up from the bottom, not necessarily boost it up to the top.
You know, and you know, I'm not a man, but, you know, as people get older, don't they, especially men, don't they lose some of their testosterone? Doesn't it, you know, just like muscle loss, you know, just the normal aging
right.
process.
Right. So he's going to have a natural drop anyway. And then coupled that with being in a long-term relationship, he's going to kind of peter out. Bottom
the poor
out.
Guy's
so
done.
That's why you get the midlife crisis. He's trying to booster it up. So if he needs a win, he needs a win somehow. He needs a win at work. He needs a win at teaming. He needs a win in his relationship. Oftentimes, they're no longer dad. So he used to be the guy because mm-hmm. he was the dad. And now the kids are gone or they're not really thinking he's the man anymore. So he needs to have something he needs to have that kind of win, that bolstering. And unfortunately, if he doesn't really get it, sometimes it can set him up for somebody else, for a relationship.
And that goes back to when you said, you know, they're just looking for love and appreciation.
Yes.
So, and women need to keep that in mind, especially if you've been in a long-term relationship, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So why do you think, tell me about the term love is blind and why you think that probably is accurate.
I know it is accurate because what we see when you fall in love, when you first fall in love, there's a deactivation in your brain. And one of the parts that deactivates is the ventral medial prefrontal cortex. That's the part of the brain that judges the other person.
Oh.
That's why they say love is blind, because you really can't see them for who they are at the moment.
Is that basically saying their faults are not as apparent to you as other people?
Yeah, it's kind of like you're putting on rose-colored glasses.
Got it.
They can do no wrong. You see only the good in them. And your friends are going, what are you doing with this guy? And you're like, what? He's wonderful. You know, you've probably...
Yeah, I see that a lot with friends and such, you know. No, it's true. Like, you know, I remember telling a girl who was engaged, what do you see in him? You know, I didn't get it because of the way he treated her. You know, they're happily married now, but, you know, she has those rose-colored glasses on still, apparently.
Well, it lasts for about 2 years.
Oh, really? There's a number on it?
Yes, there's a number.
Oh, and then what happens?
Between 1 and 3, and then your brain comes back, and then all of a sudden, you notice those things you didn't notice before. And sometimes they can be really irritating. You know, they start smacking their lips when they eat and you didn't notice, or they leave their clothes on the floor and you just figured it out after 2 years.
Yeah, you know, that list is still there. I think it really comes down to, I don't know, you know, you mentioned that you wrote a book because you kept picking the wrong guys. Did you find the right guy?
I've had some struggles, and that's one of the reasons why I research. Some people do and some people teach. So I went back to the, you know, I keep trying to figure it out from a scientific level, but mm-hmm. I think there's a little bit more to it than just science.
You know, I've been in a long-term relationship and I don't have all the answers either, but I feel like it comes down to commitment. You made a commitment. Mm-hmm. So keep that commitment or get out. I don't know.
Right.
So
I agree.
You go back to the neuroscience a little bit, and you talk about, you know, there can be a lifetime of happiness with one person if you're that lucky person, and how Valentine's Day kind of can sometimes bring out the best and the worst in people. I remember my first Valentine's Day when I was engaged, and it was like he went to go visit his college roommate because, you know, it's just about a card. You don't get it at all.
<You know>?
Come on. So yeah, exactly. Red hearts, cards, different kinds of clothing, you know, they can increase the romance. Would you agree?
Well, actually, the color red is sexually stimulating. So, yes.
Now, did you figure that out by studying a brain?
No, it's the research. Researchers, and I can't remember what university it was. I think it was. Oh, it was up in New York.
Okay.
Albany, maybe?
Okay.
That discovered that they took pictures of people and they put different colored clothing on them or different colored backgrounds, and they asked which was the sexier picture, and the color red was picked.
And I wonder if that's because people actually really felt that way, or they're just used to red being associated with maybe hotness, or I don't know. Interesting. I'd like to see that study. So,
well, if we look at nature, we see that red, like the red throats on lizards, and red spots on baboons. Mm-hmm. We see it as a symbol of like when they're sexually mature and looking for romance. So, there is probably definitely some biological underlying mechanism in there.
Now, you mentioned that one of the important neurotransmitters for long-term love is dopamine.
Yes.
And where can we find... Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, dopamine is important all the way through, but it is important for continuation of the relationship. And sometimes what happens is we get used to the person. We kind of get its old hat, and the dopamine starts dropping. And when it does, it feels like the passion is gone. So how do you get the dopamine back up? Well, if you do new and novel things together, take a new course, try something different, go eat different foods, go travel somewhere. All those type of things help increase the dopamine, which adds back that spark of passion.
I like that. You know, it could be simple, like chocolate.
Yes, chocolate increases dopamine, and so does strawberry. So if you get chocolate-covered strawberries, you got a double bang.
I love that. So let's talk about the bonding hormone, oxytocin. You mentioned that women can have high levels of this. Do men as well?
Yes. And the funny part was when the man's testosterone drops, it makes him more susceptible to oxytocin, the bonding hormone.
Makes sense.
What's important for a woman is oxytocin for the long haul. And it can actually decrease. Again, if you get used to the same person all the time, it can decrease. Once the children leave the home, it can decrease. A woman really needs to have a community. Not a man can have one female as his relationship, but a woman really needs to have more sources for oxytocin. So it's important for her to keep up with her girlfriends, to do other things, and also increase it in the relationship by kissing, cuddling, and trusting.
That makes so much sense. It totally does. My community of girlfriends are so important to me. And, you know, my husband has a few good friends, but he doesn't take the time to connect with them the way that we do, the girls do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But we get that naturally. Isn't that fascinating? This neuroscience has to be, you know, when as you were researching this for those 5 years, did you just go, wow? Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Lots of aha.
Lots of that.
Oh, that makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah. And some of it seems to be common sense, but yet sometimes we need to be hit over the head with some of the information as well.
Well, it's nice to have the science to back it up. So you kind of knew it intuitively, but now with the science, you're like, okay, I got it now.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about dopamine, oxytocin. Let's talk a little bit about serotonin. We've heard that before. That's another hormone.
Right. So when you fall in love, serotonin is the hormone of happiness. When you fall in love, you think it goes up or down?
Up?
Most people think it's up. It actually drops.
Now, is that in the same vein as the men's testosterone dropping? You don't need it anymore? Or what's the reason for that?
It drops to the level of someone with OCD,
what?
Obsessive compulsive disorder. Yes.
Hmm.
That's why you feel so obsessed when you first fall in love.
Ah, you're kind of obsessed with that person. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's Mother Nature's way of keeping you two together.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. It's about quality time. You just don't want to spend time doing anything else. Just want to be with that
person.
Wow.
Right.
Interesting. What other hormones did we not cover? What other neuroscience have we not talked about? Because I've got to wrap this up here in the next minute or so. Did we cover everything? Go ahead.
Well, there's a few other things that deactivate in your brain. So
okay.
We also lose parts of parietal lobe and our temporal lobe. The parietal lobe, the parts that we lose, are associated with selfishness. So you become less selfish. That's why you kind of feel like at one. You stop focusing on yourself and you focus on the partnership.
Hmm.
And then also there's a part of your brain called the amygdala, which sounds the alarm. So without the amygdala, if your partner does something wrong or you notice something that doesn't seem quite right, it doesn't register as being a problem.
Okay, love is blind. I'm going back to love
exactly.
is blind with that.
Right, and they can do no wrong. So, you know, that's one of the other things that they say. He can do no wrong.
Uh-huh.
He swept me off of my feet. He could do no wrong. So when those things deactivate, it's great. But once they come online, all of a sudden, after 2 years, you could get like a very high alarm system going, whoa, wait a minute, what happened? And the funny thing is that Dr. Helen Fisher did the initial research, and she found that the highest amount of divorces in the U.S. are right at that 2-year mark. She did her research in the 80s.
Really?
Yeah.
And we could probably base that somewhat on neuroscience, right?
Right. That's when your brain comes back.
What? Fascinating. Wow. So is there a magical number? They talk about the 7-year itch. Is there a magical number when you think, hey, I can make it? Or I don't know. I don't know that you can predict any of that.
Well, the research shows that you get the highest number in the beginning, and then you get a steady drop in satisfaction to the 10-year mark. And if you can make it past the 10-year mark, satisfaction goes back up.
Hmm. Okay, there's your goal, people. If you're in a relationship and you'd like to make it a lifelong commitment, you got to get to 10 years. Seems like a long time, doctor. It does. Man. Well, you have, how many books do you have out?
I have two.
Okay, what are they called and where can we find them?
Well, the latest one is called Men Chase, Women Choose, The Neuroscience of Meeting, Dating, Losing Your Mind, and Finding True Love.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you can find them anywhere, like at any booksellers and on Amazon.
Okay. And what was the first book you wrote?
And the first book I wrote was From Heartbreak to Heart's Desire.
Now, are you still studying love?
I am, yes.
Like once fascinated with it, always fascinated with it, kind of a thing?
Well, I'm going to the next level, and so I've looked at purely scientific research, and I'm actually going into more psychology a little bit more.
So do you think by next year we could have you back and we could explore that?
Absolutely. I would love to.
That would be wonderful. Well, we thank you for your time. We are talking to the Love Doctor, Professor Dawn Masler, and wow, happy Valentine's Day to you and to everybody else listening today.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And you are listening to Boomer Radio on Freedom 95.